Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 132 in the series entitled The Evolution of the Worlds, From Creation to Formation to Action, Chapter 49. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 5762.
Bruchim Haboyim, everybody, welcome back. I guess we can say Ponim Chadashas Bo'ol Lekan, not only on everybody coming back after our long break, but also on our newly designed or constructed Shiur room. This semester of classes on the Tanya of beginning now, Yud Aleph Cheshvan of 5762 Tovshin and Beis, we are up to the 49th chapter, Perik Mem Tes. And it's personally very exciting for me and for those of you who are following, who have been following through from chapter 1, because Emir Tzashem, God willing, during this year, in a few months, we will conclude, with Hashem's help, the first section of Tanya Likutei Amarim that includes 53 chapters. And I recall vividly when we began this class, it was in the other building of Hechel Menachem on 45th. And after a few weeks, there was a man in the audience, an elderly man. He had a long white beard. And he stood up and he said, Rabbi Jacobson, based on the pace that you're going, I counted, and you will finish the first section of Tanya in 15 years. And by that time, I don't know if I'll be alive, and therefore I'm forced to quit because I would like to finish the first section of Tanya. Baruch Hashem, it didn't take 15 years. It took 6 years. We started Tovshin Nun Zayin in the middle of the winter, 97. And now it's 5762, so it's the sixth year that we're learning. Now, chapter 49 is a continuation to chapter 48. What was the essential theme of chapter 48? So in Kabbalah, in the teachings of Kabbalah, of Jewish mysticism, there are generally two perspectives, two point of views, how to define the creation of the universe from Hashem's viewpoint, from Hashem's perspective, so to speak. One opinion is that of the great Kabbalist, the Ramak, Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, who lived in Tzvas, passed away in 1570 in Tzvas. And he believed that the creation of the universe was an act of self-expression on Hashem's part. Creation of the world is something in which Hashem is self-actualized. The Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, one of the greatest Mekubalim in Jewish history, who passed away 2 years later, also in Tzfas in 1572, he taught that creation was actually an act of self-forgetfulness, of self-suspension, in a way you can even say of self-denial. And the latter viewpoint of the Arizal constitutes the central theme of chapters 48 and 49 of the Tanya. The Alter Rebbe explained that the presence, the light, the energy, the expression of Hashem, defined in Kabbalah and Chassidus as Eir Ein Sof, the presence of Hashem is infinite, limitless, and endless. Therefore, if Hashem's natural energy and expression and presence would express itself and manifest itself, if it would be actualized in the process of creation, there would be no possibility and no space for any identity and any reality and any existence outside of Hashem, and for no limited or defined reality whatsoever. We discussed this several times, that a cardinal law of existence is, if you place an object of 100 cubic feet inside a space of 100 cubic feet, no other object can share that space. That's why no other human being can sit in the chair that you're sitting, because since your body occupies space, and it occupies the space of the chair, of the seat, so nobody else can occupy that space. That space has been occupied. Thank God none of us extend larger than one seat and fill a room, because then there would nobody, no, then if one person would fill this room, the entire space is occupied. Nobody else can fill that space. That's a cardinal principle in existence. Theoretically speaking, if you have an object of infinite size, if you have a person that wouldn't fill a room, and wouldn't fill a neighborhood or a city or a state or a continent, but a universe and beyond. If you have something that fills and occupies infinite size, it's an object of a limitless size. So no other object can occupy any space at any time, because that's infinite. It extends limitlessly, endlessly, infinitely. Nothing can occupy any space. Since Hashem's light, His presence, His energy is infinite, it extends not only beyond the conceptual borders of existence, but as infinity applies, it fills the entire expanse of existence as we know it. So how can anything, any identity, any being exist, assume identity at any time? Unless it's part and an expression of the infinite light, there is no room for any other it. There is only one it, because that it is infinite. So there's no room for any other it outside of the divine it. If you would say Hashem's energy is finite, it has a limit, so it ceases somewhere, and in that place where it ends, we emerge, I emerge, you emerge, identity as we know it emerges. But since the divine energy is endless, the Alter Rebbe said, every possible and conceivable space, spiritual, physical, conceptual, is occupied by the infinite expression of Hashem. How in the world, or beyond the world, is there a possibility for identity, for a defined, limited identity outside of Hashem? So the Alter Rebbe said, Hashem had to repress His infinity. He had to curtail His endless expression, so that we should be able to emerge. That we should be able to be created with our personality, with our problems and our complexities. That we should be flawed, fallible, finite human beings. He had to limit His self-expression. In a sense, He had to deny His natural presence and create a limitation to that presence. And now there is room for our emergence. In the terminology the Alter Rebbe used in 48, the creation of the world essentially is a drastic transition from what we call in Kabbalah Seviv Kalalman to what we call in Kabbalah Mamala Kalalman. It's a transition from Hashem as He is on His own naturally. Then He is defined as Seviv Kalalman. as encompassing all of the worlds, transcending infinitely all of the worlds, and there has to be a transition from that level of Seviv Kol Alma to what we call Memala Kol Alma of godliness, how he contracts himself to become a creator, a sustainer of a finite and limited universe. Based on this, we understand another point. Kabbalah and Chassidus discuss many worlds that exist beyond our world, parallel universes, if you wish. What makes one world different and distinct from another spiritual world? The degree of the tzimtzum, the degree of the contraction and the suspension that exists in the world. Those worlds that experience a lesser degree of suspension and concealment of the divine endless light, those worlds are higher worlds. In other words, in those worlds, the creatures and realities of the world feel much more how they are merely conduits for Hashem's one and endless expression. Those worlds that are impacted by the tzimtzum, by the contraction and the concealment in a deeper fashion, their egos and their self-consciousness grows. The deeper the concealment, the deeper and more powerful the self-consciousness that it produces in the world that was generated by this level of tzimtzum of Hashem's endless light. This, in a nutshell, was the point of chapter 48. Now, let's continue with Perek Mem Tes. It's on page 136, on the bottom. Daf Samaches Amid Beis. Zagdal Terebbe, V'hine, now. Af kiprote p'chinois ha-hester ve'helem eirin seiv baruch. B'shtal shalus ha-oilem is achin nivroilem haza ha-gashmi. Otzmu misveir, even though the particular aspects of the nature of the obscuring and concealment of the infinite light of Hashem in the evolution of the worlds until this material world was created, there's the concept called Hishtalshul Asylum, is the evolution of many different universes and worlds until our lowest world, our physical world that we inhabit, known as Olam Hazeh HaGashmi. So the Alter Rebbe says, though the particulars and the many aspects of the concealments and the obscuring of the divine energy for the sake of the evolution of these worlds until this world, Atzmu Misfair, are too numerous to count. From a quantitative point of view, you cannot count the degree of the concealments and processes of obscuring of Hashem's energy for the creation of the worlds. Concealment after concealment after concealment after concealment. And Alter Rebbe adds, this is from a quantitative point of view. And also from a qualitative point of view, uminim miminim shaynim. The tzimtzumim, the contractions, are of many, many diverse kinds. They come in different shades, colors, gradations. There are many different types of contractions. Ki yadu ala toyamim me'etz achayim. As is known to those who have tasted of the tree of life. It's an interesting expression. Kabbalah, the teachings of Kabbalah, the esoteric dimensions of Yiddishkeit are defined in Kabbalah, in Zohar, Parshas Nosai, as Eitz HaChayim, as the tree of life. So the Alter Rebbe says, as is well known to those who tasted from the tree of life, it's possible, although I'm not sure, that he's also trying to allude to the book Eitz Chaim of the Arizal. Because that Sefer, Eitz Chaim of the Arizal, that was transcribed by his student, Reb Chaim Vital, and really encapsulates the primary teachings of the Arizal, and it begins, the Eitz Chaim begins with the concept of Tzimtzum, and the Eitz Chaim discusses at length the whole process of evolution of the worlds. It's possible it's an additional point he's trying to allude to with his expression, L'toyamim Eitz HaChayim, perhaps. So the Alter Rebbe says, although it's impossible to count how many tzimtzumim, how many contractions exist, and how many types and the kinds of contractions exist, ach derech klal, but generally speaking, heim shleisha minei tzimtzumim atzumim klalim, there are three levels of powerful and very comprehensive contractions. Generally speaking, in the process of creation of the cosmos, we're dealing with three basic, fundamental, very comprehensive and powerful contractions of Hashem's endless light and expression. These three powerful and comprehensive contractions give rise to three very comprehensive worlds. And in each category, consists of myriads upon myriads of particulars. So each of these three comprehensive worlds includes ribui devavus, myriads upon myriads of particulars and elements and components and levels. And thus we understand that this is true also about the tzimtzumim that gives rise to these three worlds. Every detail, every component of each one of these three worlds, every component of the myriads of elements of these three worlds is shaped and molded by a particular tzimtzum that affects and gives rise to this type of element in this type of world. And therefore, just as every one of these worlds includes myriads of details, these myriads of details naturally tell us about myriads of tzimtzumim that produce these details. But generally, since we talk about three general comprehensive worlds, we also talk about three general tzimtzumim that give rise to these worlds. You'll right away ask a question. We usually talk in Kabbalah and Chassidus about four worlds. So the Alter Rebbe adds right away, key, because Olam HaAtzilus Hu Elokus Mamash. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped, I'm sorry. Each category consists of myriads and myriads of particulars. These are the three worlds of Bria, Yitzira, Asiya. The world of Bria, creation, the world of Yitzira, formation, and the world of Asiya, implementation. You'll right away ask, as I mentioned, there's a fourth world. We always talk about a fourth world beyond those three. So the Alter Rebbe explains, Kiyolam Atzilus, for the world of Atzilus, the highest world, Hu Elokus Mamash, this is godliness itself, this is Mamash godliness. And thus it will not go into the framework of these, into the picture, into the puzzle of these three worlds, where we say there were three powerful tzimtzumim. This would not apply to Atzilus because it's mamash godliness. In other words, the world of Atzilus indeed is another type of world. So although we call it an olam, a universe, it is a world in which it is felt how this universe is part and parcel of Hashem's infinite light. And therefore, it is indeed an infinite world. And the consciousness of that world is thus that it has no consciousness. The consciousness of that world is defined by the fact that it feels itself as totally nullified in the endless presence of Hashem. One second. So what makes it an island? What are you calling it a world for? Obviously, it's not a world. It's a world. And the truth is that for the existence of a reality like Atzilus, you also need a tzimtzum. And that's why it's called a world. But that is a tzimtzum within godliness itself. That's why the Alter Rebbe says, Olam HaAtzilus Hu Elokus Mamash. It is a contraction, it is a suspension, it is a limitation within godliness itself to produce, so to speak, another type of godliness. The infinity of godliness assumes in Atzilus divine properties of what we call spheres, characteristics, qualities, modes of expression, chachma, bina, das, personality features, characteristics of conception, comprehension, application, attraction, rejection, compassion, and so on and so forth, the 10 modes, the 10 characteristics that define the universe of Atzilus. But these are godly characteristics. It's godliness assuming 10 properties. So there's a tzimtzum needed for it, but it's a tzimtzum within godliness itself. Post-Atzilus, we need a tzimtzum that will allow the emergence of something that is not godliness. Something that perceives itself as outside, as alien, as distinct from godliness. And this requires a whole different type of contraction and tzimtzum. And this is what Alter Rebbe is saying. The world of Atzilus is a lekus mamash. In order to create the world of Bria, which consists of the higher souls and angels. Souls and malachim al yoinim, higher angels, supernal angels. Asher avidosam lashem bibchinis chachma binadas amislapshim bahem, whose service to Hashem, is in the sphere of the intellectual faculties, the cognitive properties of Chabad, of conception, comprehension, application, which are clothed within them, v'hei masigim u'makablu mehem, and they, the souls and the malachim, the angels of Bria, apprehend these faculties and receive their identity and energy from them, from the Chabad which illuminates them, the Alter Rebbe's sake. The characteristics of Chachma Bina Das of Atzilus enclose themselves, so they manifest themselves within the souls and the angels of Bria in a fashion that is compatible with their unique identity, as Hashem wanted the identity of Bria should be. And Alter Rebbe apparently emphasizes Malachim Elyonim, higher angels. What does he mean, higher angels? Because in Perek Lamedtes, in chapter 39, he said usually angels are associated with the world of Yetzirah, but there are few that are associated with Bria. You just see the meticulousness of his expression. So he says Malachim al Yainim, I'm referring to here the higher level of Malachim, who are connected, they reflect the personality, the identity of the world of Bria. So he says, "Vehei masigim u'makablu mehem." They receive their identity and energy from the characteristics of Chachma bin Adas, and therefore their service of Hashem is in the level and in the domain of Chachma bin Adas, as he explained this at length in chapters 38 and 39. We discussed then what it means serving Hashem with the characteristics of Chachma bin Adas, and so forth. This is the world of Bria. So in order that from Atzilus there should be created a world of Bria, in which there are souls and angels that serve Hashem and experience godliness in the fashion of Chachma bin Adas. In order that this should happen, Hayatchil Otzimtzum Otzum Kanal, there necessarily preceded a powerful contraction. The first thing that had to happen was there had to be a Tzimtzum Otzum, a powerful tzimtzum, a powerful contraction and obscuring of the light, so that Bria can emerge. Kinisker Leil, as mentioned above, in chapter 48 and in chapter 38, 39. So a mighty contraction was necessary in order to ensure that the godly light that is expressed in Atzilus should be hidden, and only a contracted form of light should illuminate and create the world of Bria and the creatures within it. V'chein mi'Bria li'Yetzirah, so to next stage from Bria to Yetzirah. In order for the world of Yetzirah, which is a lower type of identity, what do we mean a lower? An identity in which the infinity and the exclusivity of godliness is less felt, in which there's more self-consciousness, so to speak. For that to be created, there again had to be a powerful contraction. Why? For the minute portion of light which clothes itself in the world of Bria is still in the category of infinity in relation to the world of Yetzirah. So if the light of Bria would not undergo another powerful contraction, the identity of Yetzirah could never emerge. It's unable to clothe itself in the latter in Yetzirah except through contraction and obscuration. If the light of Bria would be manifestly expressed, even though relative to Atzilus, it's a minute portion of light, but relative to the identity that Hashem wants, Yetzirah should experience, Bria itself would be endless, and it would be impossible that the identity of Yetzirah should ever experience itself and should ever emerge as a being. So Bria also had to be obscured and contracted, and only a very finite ray of the godliness of Bria could now give rise to the next world, the world of Yetzirah. And he continues, V'chein mi'Yetzirah la'Asiyah, and so too from Yetzirah ta'Asiyah. Here too, if the light of the world of Yetzirah would be manifestly expressed, that's endless for the world of Asiyah. It would swallow it up. It would drown it. So the world, though, there has to be, again, a powerful limitation and contraction to enable the light of Yetzirah to now descend and give rise and generate and create the world of Asiya. And Alter Rebbe writes in parentheses, O Kamei Shekos of B'makim Acher, Biyur Shloisha Tzimtzum Memelu Ba'arichis. An elaborate explanation of these three contractions is given elsewhere. And he adds, L'karev al Sechleinu Hadal. The purpose of this elaborate explanation that's given elsewhere is in order to make them more accessible to our poor intellect. Sechleinu Hadal, to our poor cognitive faculties, to our poor minds. We don't, it's unclear where this Makom Acher is. In the Alter Rebbe's discourses that we are aware of, it's difficult to find a place that he particularly addresses these three tzimtzumim in an elaborate fashion, as he says here, it's Bahariches, more elaborate than here. In Torah Eir, Parshas Vayera, he addresses the tzimtzum at length, and that's perhaps what Alter Rebbe was referring to. Since the Alter Rebbe does want to make it accessible to our poor mind, so, albeit briefly, I would like to address these three tzimtzumim for a few moments. And I want to employ an example, a metaphor, which is by no means complete. It's an incomplete example, but I think it can help us clarify and gain insight into many components that characterize these worlds, although there are also many differences. This metaphor that I will present is based partially on a discourse of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, in his famous dense work known as Hemshech Tafrir Samach Vav, his discourses of the year 1905 and 1906, Yom Tov Shir Rosh Hashanah Tafrir Samach Vav, which includes a continuation of approximately 65 discourses that are continuing one from another, which he said over the course of 3 years, from 1905 through 1907, 1908. And in the second discourse of the book, I believe, Zehayim, one of the first discourses of the Sefer, he employs a metaphor. And elaborating that metaphor, I think we can present the following case. In Kabbalah and Chassidus generally speaking, we talk about six levels or six realities. We talk about Eir Ein Sof itself, which means Hashem's natural presence, Hashem's natural energy expression. You're right, the word natural is a word that emerged after a lot of tzimtzumim. It doesn't belong there. What I mean natural is innate, essential. Essential, yeah. Again, nature is a product of a lot of contractions. But that's true. So you have Eir Ein Sof on its own, the innate expression and energy and presence of Hashem. Then Kabbalah and Chassidus talk about a major tzimtzum, a major withdrawal process or concealment process that occurred in that endless expression. And post that tzimtzum, as a result of that tzimtzum, new realities emerge, and they're known as the worlds that transcend even Atzilus. A few names, a reality in Kabbalah known as Adam Kadmon, primordial man. What is primordial man? Primordial man is a reality that Kabbalah and Chassidus discuss. It's a reality that can become manifest only post-tzimtzum, but it transcends the world of Atzilus. Kabbalah talks about Adam Kadmon, a world known as the world of Akudim, a world known as the world of Nikudim. These are all worlds in Eitz Chaim of the Arizal, Ki Yadua L'Toyam Im Eitz HaChaim in Alter Rebbe's words. All transcend Atzilus. They're discussed, by the way, in Torah Eir Parshas Noach from the Alter Rebbe. So I mentioned generally three, Adam Kadmon, Akudim, Nikudim. And in many, in all of them, there are various gradations and levels and particles, myriads and myriads of worlds and levels, and so to speak. Now you have the world of Atzilus. which is a third domain. So we had the Ein Sof, the innate presence of Hashem that precedes any contraction or limitation or withdrawal. Then we have the Tzimtzum and the worlds that are the produced post-Tzimtzum. Basically, Adam Kadma and Akudim and Akudim. I'm just giving you the Kabbalistic terms for them. Behemah Rabba Lifnei Atzilus is all part of those worlds. These are called Olamas Shalifnei Atzilus. Atik and Arich, the levels of Keser, are before the world of Atzilus. This is all above Atzilus, post-symptom above Atzilus. Then we have the world of Atzilus that he addresses here. The world of Atzilus is a third domain. This is a world in which we talk about 10 spheres, 10 characteristics that contain lights, that are a composite of lights and vessels. And this is also known in Kabbalah as the world of Brudim. So when Yaakov Avinu was playing around there, so to speak, with Lavan's sheep, manipulating the situation, in the discourses of the Alter Rebbe and other Chabad Rebbes on Parshas Vayetze, the three terms of Akudim, Nekudim, and Brudim is actually Yaakov formulating and revolutionizing and tapping into the three worlds of Akudim, Nekudim, and Brudim. Akudim above Atzilus, Nekudim above Atzilus, and Brudim, which is the world of Atzilus. Akudim means the bound world. Akud, Akeda, binding, in this week's Parsha. Binding, bound. A bound world. It's a world in which all 10 characteristics are akud b'kli echa. They're bound up in one vessel. There are no 10. They're all bound up in one vessel. Nekudim is the distinct world. Distinctions, nekudos, nekudos. It's not a bound world, on the contrary. It's a distinct individualistic world. This is also known as the world of toyu, the world of chaos. There's 10 lights and 10 vessels, but each one is all-consuming, infinite, relatively speaking, all-powerful, and therefore an explosion happened in this world because they couldn't get along with each other, they couldn't get along with themselves. Huh? The lower seven elements, the Kudim. Finally, we have Brudim. Brudim is the integrated world. This is the world of Atzilus. So we have now a third world, Akudim, Nekudim, and Brudim. But generally speaking, you have the Ein Sof before the Tzimtzum and the world it produced. Atzilus is a third level, and then we have Briya, Yitzira, Asiya is another three worlds, which gives us six domains, generally speaking. Now, one of the metaphors that can help us understand this, and allow us to understand what Alter Rebbe is saying here in Tanya, is as follows. Every project that a human being undertakes must necessarily begin, if it is to be successful, with a vision in his or her mind. In the vision itself, however, there are two levels or two stages. The initial vision is a general and comprehensive one. Then the person develops the vision into a detailed vision. For example, if a human being wants to write a play, if you want to write a play, the first thing, the first necessary step is a general vision. In your mind, you experience a general theme and thrust for the play. That's the first thing. Once you have a general vision, what is my theme? What is my thrust? What is the message? What is the mission statement? Next step is a detailed vision. I envision in my mind the entire play, the story, the climax, the heroes, the villains, the beginning, the middle, the end, the structure. But it's still all in my mind. In my mind, I have a whole story, but it's in my mind. So we have a general vision, an initial vision. Then comes a detailed vision. That includes the entire story as it is in my mind. Now it has to come a new stage. What's the next stage? You have to take a pen and a piece of paper and write the first draft of your play. And this is a general outline on a piece of paper of the entire play. In this draft, you will have scenes, you will have a division of scenes, you will have the plots, you will have the skeleton of the entire play on paper. This is not enough. Next stage. Next stage is you have to take another piece of paper and another pen, and this time it's a lot of pieces of paper, and write a detailed blueprint. The first blueprint, the skeleton, now has to grow meat and flesh and bones. Now you need a detailed script of your play. Every single scene, scene number one, this character walks in. At this time, he's dressed this way, he's standing this way, he says this, he receives this response. The degree of the light in the room is this, the degree of the darkness is this. You have everything on script, but it's still in script. Now comes the final stage, implementation. The play has to get on stage. You have to hire the people, hire the actors. It has to become a reality and actually materialize on stage in front of an audience. And now it actually happened. It reached its final culmination and its final purpose. The same stages exist. I know, I assume not too many people here are in the work of writing plays, maybe the Bacherman camp. But the same is true if you want to open a business. If you want to open a business, you have to have all of these stages. The first thing, you have to have a general vision. What's the type of business you want to open up? What type of business do I want to create? The next thing is, I need to have a detailed vision in my mind how exactly this business is going to work, how it's going to function, what is it going to consist of, how is it going to be created, how is it going to be successful, in details, all in my mind. Next, I need to take a scrap of paper and write down a mission statement, a plan, a general outline of the business. Now, next stage is, I need a detailed plan, detail by detail. This has to be done, and this has to be achieved, and this has to occur. But it's still, you still don't have a business. The money is not flowing into your bank account. It's all in your mind, and it's all on paper. Beautiful. Now comes the stage of implementation. The same is true, and it's extremely important if you ever have to write an article, an essay, a paper, certainly a book. The first thing, you have to begin with a general vision. What point do you want your book should convey? Was willst du rausbringen? What essence, what is the theme your article, your paper, your essay is trying to bring out? Then you have to have a detailed vision. Exactly, you envision all of the elements and ideas and feelings you're going to convey. Next step is, you have to take a pen and write an outline of the entire book. Chapter 1 is going to express this. Chapter 2 is going to express this. Next step is, you have to actually write the book. Write word for word and correct every sentence and go back and delete and insert and cut and paste. It's not an outline now. Now it's every sentence. You have to toil on every expression and every nuance and where does a paragraph end and where does it begin and so on and so forth. Now in a book, we usually don't have the last stage of implementation because that is the implementation, so it's cut short. Now, anybody who doesn't behave this way is usually unsuccessful. There are people who start writing articles, they don't know what they want to bring out. They schreiben. What happens? You write a book, you don't have an outline of your whole book. So what happens? You write, you write, you write. When you finish, suddenly you realize, this, I don't want to bring this out. So you have to now go erase something that you put in hours of work. Any successful businessman, successful a writer, successful musician, artist, builder, the same is true when you build a home, must by necessity to be successful have these three stages. It's always easier to start with the later stages. But at the end, in the long term, it doesn't serve you well. Out of laziness, we like to go to the bottom line. Every successful human being knows any undertaking, you begin with vision, and then you go ahead with the next stages. It's the Derech Arucha Ktzara, you mean. It's the long, shorter way. And the wrong way, you're saying, is the short, longer way. Now, let's think a moment about this metaphor. This play, this book, this business exists on four levels. It exists in four domains. It exists, I'm sorry, in five domains. The same play exists in five domains, in five different worlds. This play, this book, this business exists in your initial vision. But in your initial vision, it all boils down to one essential point. The 80 chapters of the book, the 60 scenes of the play, The myriads of components of the business are all reduced to one quintessential mission statement. What is the point that I want to bring out with this book? What is the theme I want to present through this play? That theme includes every character, every element, every detail. If it's a real play and the play suits the mission statement and the book, every word suits the general, the initial vision, in the vision you have everything, but everything is just part of one point. There's no distinctiveness between this word, this scene. That's one level in which the play exists. Then you have the play, the book, or the business as it exists in your detailed vision. And here you have everything. You have the whole play, but it's all part of your soul, of your imagination, of your heart, of your brain power. When you have the blueprint on paper, the general blueprint, now you have the play or the book or the characters of the play, the ideas of the book, already in a more concrete fashion. They have already left your own mind. They're already not part of your imagination. They're already distinct from you. In fact, somebody else can steal the draft and do with it whatever he wants, as long as it's in your mind. Nobody can take it from you. It's obviously yours. Once you put it on paper, somebody can actually use it for what he wants. It's not you anymore. But still, in the general skeleton, when somebody reads it, if they even understand it, it's obvious that all of the characters and all of the components and all of the details are just part of one general vision. They don't assume a real independent characteristic. In the general skeleton, everything is part of that general vision. Then you have a detailed blueprint, actually a script. And the script includes myriads and myriads of tedious details. And each detail assumes an independent identity and so on and so forth. And then you have the play, or the business as it exists in the physical world, where every character, every prop assumes concrete physical dimensions. You have the props also in your initial vision, but there's no physical dimensions there and there's no distinctions. You have the props also in the detailed vision, but it's not physical and it's all in you. You have the props in the skeleton, but it's not physical and it's still, it's outside of you, it's still not physical, and it's evident that it's part of a general plan. And then you have all the props in the detailed script, it's still not physical, although it's very detailed oriented and self-contained. And finally you have the physical props and the physical actors and the physical with physical dimensions and so on and so forth. Now this exactly is the way that Hashem created His own business, and this is the way Hashem wrote His book, and this is the way that Hashem created His play. It's a long play. Very long play. But this is exactly how Kabbalah describes it. And you'll see it exactly. And it's fascinating because really, what Alter Rebbe does here is he allows us, in addition for spiritual enlightenment, he allows us really to understand the system in which, if you want to be successful in any undertaking in life, if you don't do it the way Hashem did it, your business or your play or your book or your other project will be flawed. And the flaws might not be noticeable initially, but they will be noticeable as time goes on. And anybody who runs a business, particularly people who have to come into a business and have to fix up other people's messes, will realize most messes that we fix up is because the people who created it did not begin the way how Hashem began His business. They did not have a vision. How did Hashem do His business? The first thing is what we call initial vision, the initial mission statement, what Kabbalah calls Adam Kadmon. The initial vision of Hashem was what? I want a world. I want a world. That's it. This is what I want. Over there, every detail of history is all part of that word, that sentence, I want a world. That is the vision. Will. Yeah, will.